The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
This morning on The Breakfast Grill, we welcome Peter Draper, former marketing director at Valencia Football Club and also Manchester United. Good morning, Peter, and welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Morning, Ham. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Now, let's start with this. You were with the sportswear manufacturer Umbro back in the 80s and through the 90s.
Yep.
Then United in the 90s, and then your two-year stint at La Liga side Valencia until May 2017. Talk to us about how much sports marketing has evolved over the last three decades or so.
Well, I think it could be summed up by the simple word professionalism, really, Han. I think in my early career and experience of sports marketing, it was a very simple business, really, particularly around the sponsorship piece. Less so, but a bit more sophisticated when you were talking about being a sports manufacturer. Clearly, Adidas, in those early days of my involvement in sport in the 70s and 80s, were a force to be reckoned with, but things have changed in that sphere, certainly along the way. You know, new players come into the scene, Under Armour in particular, in this last few years. But even Nike, you know, it's pretty easy to forget that Nike weren't really involved in football until 1994. Feel as though they've been in it a long time, but you know, that's 70 years after Adidas started in football. So even in the last 20 or 30 years, there's been quite a lot of change. But overall, the industry, I would say, is just much more professional.
And also the scope of it all has really expanded. Certainly, you know, it's no longer just about getting that name onto the jersey kit. It's also about other partnerships with commercial entities, right? So talk to us about the scope of marketing when it comes to modern football.
Yeah, I think it's easy to think about it in sort of three pieces, really. For modern-day sports organizations, sports teams, probably sports brands as well. Certainly when you talk about sports teams like Manchester United, Valencia, the Real Madrids of this world, Bayern Munich's, and I know there's a lot of people in Malaysia and Southeast Asia who've got, you know, very strong fans of English football, Spanish football. But in those businesses, it's very simple to think about it in three pieces, really, commercially. The first is television. Clearly, that's changing a lot in recent years, but nevertheless, today television plays an important and very important part financially and from a projection standpoint. You know, it's the key marketing tool, really, of most football clubs, being on TV. Second, but most important, I guess, over the years, over the last 70 years or 80 years, and still very important today in the vast majority of markets, is the home audience, the people who pay their money to go and sit and watch the game live in the stadium. So the stadium experience and the stadium revenues are very important to football clubs, rugby clubs, cricket clubs, I guess. Most sports, you know, around the world, doesn't matter, it's NFL or NBA, you know, the live audience in an arena is very important to the financial well-being of those organizations. And then the third one, and they sort of piggyback off the first, I guess, in terms of TV and media exposure, are the different levels and layers of commercialism that any given group of marketing professionals, sales professionals inside a sports organization can bring to the party by using the projection that is being given to the sports, their team, or their individual players through endorsements, and commercialize that. So it is no surprise when big audiences are tuning into television, radio, you know, watching and reading about this on a daily basis, that commercial organizations, brands want to take advantage of that, because getting to an audience is difficult. And projecting the right image is always difficult and a challenge for marketeers. So endorsement through and with and partnerships with football clubs, other sporting institutions, particularly at the highest level, comes at a big ticket price. but actually is very successful as well if done properly. And I think in that area, when I talk about professionalism within the sport and within sports, the area that perhaps has improved the most in the last 5 to 10 years even is the capability within sporting organisations of understanding what a sponsor, what a commercial partner wants from a relationship, and being able to deliver that in true partnership style. Provide benefits both for the sports team as well as the brand, you know, and that's big money today, you know, across the World Cup, European Championships, international events such as Eurobasket or NBA Finals, those kind of audience-attracting sports events bring with them considerable global interest and, as such, considerable global interest from businesses and brands around the world.
So the criticism here, Peter, is that modern football has become an instrument for commercial interests, right? Is this the new reality? Is this something that sports purists will just have to get used to?
Well, I don't see that there's any conflict, personally. You know, the sports purists, if you're thinking about, let's just talk about soccer, if we could, talk about football. It's still 11 against 11. Nothing much has changed there. There's a little dabble with some technology for the benefit of the sport, and actually for the benefit of the spectator, I think, as well, you know, with goal-line technology and that kind of thing. But overall, the sport hasn't changed dramatically. Only the environment and the interest that there is around the world through the power and of multimedia and, you know, the world becoming a smaller place. I don't think a great deal's changed. The commercial aspect to this, you know, footballers, if you want to talk about their pay, the artist, the talent, footballers have always, you know, since the, I guess, the 60s anyway, being relatively well paid compared with common man. Now, today, clearly some of those, the numbers bandied around in the media, who's getting paid what, considerably far and above what a common man can ever dream about in his wildest dreams of earning. So there's maybe a huge gap between what Cristiano earns and what you and I earn today. But nevertheless, the sport itself hasn't really changed, just the environment and the benefits associated with commercialization. And I personally don't see that as a conflict at all.
Now, Peter, you're too kind to lump myself into the same earning bracket as you, but I digress there. But here's the thing, though, because for football fans who perhaps cringe at the sight of their club logo being stamped onto a can of potato chips, or, you know, having footballers showcase their lack of acting skills in movie promos, and or even having a tractor partnership, right? I mean, where does one draw the line between commercial progress and selling out?
I think it is a difficult one, and clearly each institution or each individual has their own view as to what is acceptable and what is unacceptable. I think there are some circumstances today whereby, you know, certain organisations are stretching their level of credibility for a particular partnership, and it's difficult for a fan to understand that there's any kind of similarity in wants, needs or interests from some commercial relationships that exist today. Commercial tractor with, you know, a football team might seem a hell of a stretch. I don't think it's as much of a stretch for Tiger Beer or for, you know, Coca-Cola, and those kind of brands have trodden this path for a long, long time. I think it is difficult to comprehend. Equally, I think fans do understand that monies have to be brought into the game from outside of the traditional monies, you know, which historically have really been the gate money, gate receipts, in order to provide the right kind of levels of sophistication in a football club and the right levels of financial support to provide, you know, good, entertaining, competitive teams and competitive players. And the reality for me in Europe, certainly today, and I could stretch it a little bit and say globally, you know, this is a global sport, and the players, the talent is being recruited on a global basis. And as such, you know, we're all individual clubs competing, you know, right across multi-markets. And if high salaries and that kind of thing are being provided to attract talent into a given market, then the only way for other markets to compete is to have a level of sophistication around their commercial enterprises that brings in more money. Yes, attract a relationship with a football club might seem a stretch, but you know, they do have to bring the cash in order to compete. So it's difficult. For me, as a marketing professional in that game for a long time, you know, I'm a less is more man. Fewer partnerships, deeper partnerships, longer partnerships, rather than lots of them. But, you know, there are others who say, you know, the sum of the parts is better than nothing at all. And so are looking to put together programs that, you know, have 20, 30, 40 commercial relationships.
Right, because a $700 million kit deal with Adidas, that doesn't happen every other week, right? So at the end of
not
the,
at all.
Yeah, exactly. So at the end of the day, is this a slippery slope, given that professional football clubs or any sports franchise for that matter has to, like you say, remain competitive and go out there and chase the money? Is there an inherent cap to all these commercial activities, or kind of like the sky's the limit?
I think there is a level that the industry is finding which is acceptable. But, you know, you have to look at the evolution of markets and what's happening in certain places. Your own country and countries in and around Southeast Asia as well would be good examples that as audiences are more and more drawn to sporting events through the power of the media, then there is commercial opportunity in those places as and when the consumer at large has more disposable income and is likely to be influenced by endorsement from a football player, a basketball player, or a film star, or whatever it happens to be. And so, you know, there may well be a point in this conversation around the internationalization of brands and the use of sponsorship and commercial relationships, particularly with football teams, that in the more advanced commercial countries and the more sophisticated commercial countries today, that sponsorship has reached a level, you know, a natural level now. And I'll call new economies understanding and benefiting from movement into these areas as a channel of communication and marketing for their brands.
And coming up in just a bit, we'll dive deeper into your time at Manchester United. I'm speaking to Peter Draper, former marketing director at Valencia Football Club and also Manchester United.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me is Peter Draper, former marketing director at Valencia Football Club and Manchester United. Now, Peter, you began at United just a few months after the treble winning season. During your 6 to 7 years at United, how much were you able to tangibly add to the brand? Because even prior to your arrival, Manchester United was already this global phenomenon, right? So did the club's stature and history, did that do all the work for you? Or how much were you able to really add to the brand?
In any business, you always need a good core product, and the core product at a football club is a football team. So, you know, winning or at least being competitive, very competitive on a daily and seasonal basis is key to anything else that you can do, really. For me, this is just about working around the edges. You know, I've always said that I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to create petrol for the engine. You know, we're building a machine on a week-to-week basis and on a seasonal basis, and it needs petrol. You know, they are McLarens, these things. They're not little putt-putt cars. And so when you're doing that, you just need as much high-octane fuel as you can possibly get. And then that gives the puppet masters, the Sir Alexes of this world, the opportunity to say, right, okay, well, we can we can invest in this infrastructure for player development. We can, we don't have a, this kind of a player, so we'll go out and try and find one. We can have a structure around our coaching programs that is second to none. We can build a facility. So my job was, whilst difficult, is not as difficult as it would be if you're not winning football matches, because you've got a great core product. So for me, it was a question, and for the organisation, it was having an organisational structure that can cope with that. You know, when I joined United in 99, I think there were four of us in the marketing department. Today, and it's quite a while since I've been there, clearly, but you know, it's into the hundreds, with an office in London that's got over 100 people. So, you know, the level of sophistication has gone on and on. I was just there at a moment in time, adding to what had already been done before. You know, a good merchandising operation became an incredible merchandising operation with a few tweaks. You know, a membership scheme, which had been a very good membership scheme, became an incredible membership scheme. Our international development, you know, moved from being interesting to explosive. And so, you're just trying to manage interest from a variety of quarters, commercial partners, looking for certain kinds of commercial partners to be with you, increasing the revenue from those opportunities. That's sort of doing the day job, all built off a fabulous platform of a great team and a great history.
Now, Peter, it's one thing to try and boost a legacy club like United, you know, recognized around the world, but what about your time at Valencia then? Make that comparison for us. How do you even propel the Valencia brand onto the same stage as the Manchester United's, Real Madrid's, the Barcelona's of the world?
Yeah, it's nearly impossible in real terms, but if it was totally impossible, you'd give up. And so it isn't outside the realms of possibility to compete in certain areas. And the first one is back to basics. You've got to start with the core products. And so getting the team right, getting the football infrastructure right, is core to sporting success. And sporting success will bring commercial success. It doesn't always follow that quickly. You know, if Valencia... I'm delighted to say they're second in the Liga at the moment, having a fabulous start to the season, which is wonderful, you know. But you've got to be consistent over time. Manchester United, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Inter Milan, AC Milan, Juventus. You know, we could all name the top 20 clubs in the world. Really, your list wouldn't be much different to mine. Over time, they have been very competitive. Doesn't mean they win it every year, but they've been competitive. So the fan base thinks they're going to win. And so that makes turning up for games interesting, exciting, and profitable in some respect for the teams, because people want to go and see an exciting, wonderful, competitive team. My time at Valencia, we had two torrid seasons on the field. Wasn't for people not trying. Everybody on the commercial, on the football side of the business, are trying as hard as they possibly can. But it's not magic. You know, you can't wave a magic wand. One player doesn't make a team. Change of a coach doesn't make a team sometimes. And so, you know, these things can take time. But when you get that formula right, then you can do the same things as Manchester United do. Not to the same level and scale, but actually the basics for any business. And this is what I'll be talking about when I come to the National Entrepreneur Institute's convention in Kuala Lumpur in November. The basics are the basics. You have to have good people. You have to have an organizational structure. You have to have a vision as to where you're heading and the destination for that business. And do the, you know, get those people to do the work. You know, if you've got good people, get them to do the job that you employed them to do. And, you know, the rewards will come. Now, in a football club, it's quite difficult if you're not winning on the field. You know, interest wanes commercially and from the fans. And so it's difficult to pull it up. But you should still keep doing the right things. You know, you've got to think about your fan base. You've got to think about what facilities you provide to them and everything associated with in and around the game, the communication levels on a day-to-day basis. You've got to think about your commercial program. Are we going to go for, you know, a lot of local companies or try to put in place a program that has 6, 8, 10 bigger international companies and come with you on the journey and hope you can persuade them that the journey's worthwhile? So you're doing the same things. It's a darn sight easier if your football club's winning. That is a fact.
So at the end of the day, focus on your core product and make sure you got the right people in place. Got it. And Peter, let's end with this then. Share with us your juiciest Manchester United story. I know you've got one. Go ahead.
Juiciest Manchester United story. Well, the way to sum up Manchester United in my time there is personality that's probably the greatest manager that's ever lived, Sir Alex Ferguson. I did mention in passing there that he's as interested in winning a game of Scrabble as he is winning a game of football at that particular moment in time. And actually, when we came to Malaysia in 2002, I think it was, I had the pleasure of sitting in the airport in the lounge. We were delayed getting through to Singapore, playing a game of Scrabble with Sir Alex. It might as well have been the Champions League final. You know, the guy just wants to win. A year later, we played Trivial Pursuit on a plane to the USA, exactly the same. The man's a winner, and you know, instilled in everybody around him that sort of mentality. It's not a trivial story. It's indicative of the drive that comes from true leaders inside an organisation that will allow that leadership to flourish, work well, do what they have to do, and use the skills that they've got to make an amazing football club. The only funny thing, the amusing thing about my game of Scrabble with him, he's forever looking at his watch, as you would be well aware as a football interested individual. At football matches, he's forever looking at his watch and telling the referee blah blah blah. It was surprising playing a game of Scrabble. He was only interested in the timing device when it wasn't his go. If it was his go, it was back to Fergie time. take as long as you like to find a word with no vowels. You know, one of those. Really interesting to watch him.
Well, unfortunately, the final whistle has blown. That's all the time we have for this chat. Hey, Peter, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us. That was Peter Draper, former marketing director at Valencia Football Club and Manchester United. I'm Tan Chung Han, and this is BFM 89.9.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.